News Radio 690 KTSM presents the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. ephistory.com. Pepe's, New Mexican restaurant and cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
It's a Saturday, it's history, and we're sitting here, Melissa Sargent, doing radio.
Doing nothing.
No, we're doing radio. Right, and this is the only show in town that actually focuses on El Paso history and does it regularly. I mean, there have been people coming and going promoting our history here and there, and we're the only ones still here. Mm-hmm. And it's a good idea to promote this. This is great stuff.
Well, it's great stuff. It really is. And I mean, people, we've got a lot.
Everybody needs to know it. Every kid in El Paso were in independent school districts all over town, and they were then taught the El Paso history, you'd find all kinds of kids talking about it and say, hey, did you know about this? Did you know about that? And what is in the history? You become kind of interested in your community. And I think if you don't have that, people then just say, there's nothing going on here. I think I'll take a college out of town and just stay out of town.
Well, just think if the teachers used just even our archive shows as syllabus. You know, they could do some really neat things in their classes.
A lot of it there. All right, so we've got this radio show on KTSM AM 690. And where else can they find us?
They can go online to ktsmradio.com and listen to us on the iHeart system, which listens to everywhere in the world. Or they can also download an app on their phone that's the iHeartRadio.com. And take it on your smartphone, your computer, or your tablet, wherever you go.
And we're the ones who always say Texas history begins in El Paso, and you'll hear some of that today for sure. But also, they can find us, we found us already, but trivia. What happened to trivia?
We have trivia today.
Trivia
for $20 and gift certificates to Pepe's Fine New Mexican Food up in Canutillo.
But don't go today.
Don't go today. Is it 2 weeks or 1 week?
No, they'll be back next on the 10th.
On the 10th, okay. And then also we're going to have El Paso Gold DVDs to give away, and we've got historic sites, smelter, Mexican Revolution sites, Tom Lee's El Paso, Ghost Stories 2, 3, and 4, and we have Mount Cristo Rey and El Paso Gold's small print, Legends of El Paso's Mountains.
It's bigger on the front than you look on the edge.
I should
all right,
do that.
That's
there
what we got to give away today. Let's talk about also, what's that history moment you have cooking?
Oh, that one today. It was kind of fun because that was from the San Elizario area, and it was about Loreto Academy and their history and how they began. How they got here.
They were requested to come here.
They were requested by a couple of Indian fighters.
Interesting stuff.
It's kind of interesting.
Well, today being what it is, we're going to talk about history that has come and gone, but also a lot of history that's still here because of a group of people that were here before you were. No matter who your people were, these people were very likely here before yours. And we're talking about the Isleta del Sur Pueblo. They renovated and updated their tribal museum at the Tigua Indian Cultural Center. So
cool,
we'll talk about that as the headline. We're going to talk about the history of the whole place with their tribal historian, and I would call him sort of like one of the sole members of the Tiguas, and his Rick Quesada. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
Welcome here, Sergio. Good morning, Rick.
Can we hear him again? Good Say morning. Hello.
Try to get grab another one then. Grab another mic there.
No, he's still not there.
We need one of these mics to work.
But take a hammer over there,
Sergio. Talk to us. Anyway, Rick Quesada is here, and what we're going to talk about is kind of
hand signs. Smoke signals.
We're going to do hand signs on the radio. But the idea of the Tiguas being here before anyone else, that's accurate, isn't it?
That is correct.
And so now your mic is working. We'll say hello again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Rick Quesada, you have been one of the major Tigua people I have known, because I did a video with you guys, year 2000. And I didn't know any of you people. And Nick Hauser ringed me up and said, hey, they want to do a video down here. You want to come see what's going on? So I did. And I ran into you and Albert Alvidris and Filberto Candelaria. And it was a very interesting group of young men who were very determined to make sure the world knew who they were. And up until then, the Tigua Indians of El Paso, the Isleta del Sur Pueblo, didn't really have a lot of publicity except, oh, you're Indians. Yeah, we're Indians. And then nobody explained it. So that's what we did. That was fun. That was good. Now, what are your thoughts about how the Tiguas got here? Because you've got this museum now that is on Yaya Lane. That's got to be a Tigwa word. Yaya?
Yaya. I wouldn't know that.
I know that. No. But down there just south of the Speaking Rock Entertainment Center on Socorro Road, and that's where I rolled in there last Sunday just to see what was going on. You have some new exhibits in your museum.
That is correct.
What is that?
Yeah, we developed through a grant that we received through the Micah Foundation. We developed 29 panels that depict the history of our people, starting all the way in Colorado, in the Four Corners area. It spans through the drought and the migration from that area to the Rio, to the center of the of New Mexico. In the Rio Grande, and then finally from 1680 Pueblo Revolt all the way to the present.
And so that history is a bit unusual in that normally Indian tribes don't get up and move themselves.
That is correct.
You didn't move yourself this time, did you?
Not in 1680.
No. Tell me about that.
Sure. In 1680 there was a revolt in which a tribal member from the Pueblo of San Juan, his name was Pope. And he was a shaman. He was a leader, and he was tortured by the Spanish, tortured and beaten. And some of his friends were actually hung in Santa Fe. And after that, he really didn't like the Spanish very much. So he devised a plan to unite all of the pueblos to rid themselves of Spanish, and they were very successful in August 10 of 1680. What is known as the Pueblo Revolt and what we know it as the Battle of Santa Fe, he defeated Otermin and the Spanish in Santa Fe.
And this was 82 years after Oñate had led the Spaniards up there colonize the people, whether they liked it or not. And that was the situation in 1680 after several generations of Tiguas and other tribes in northern New Mexico. Pope decided to change things. What happened when the Battle of Santa Fe?
The Battle of Santa Fe was a bloody battle. It took about a week, from what we know of. But Otermin got defeated.
The Spaniard.
The Spaniard, yeah. He had about 100 professional soldiers, give or take, with him. And then over 800 to 900 Spanish women, children, and families and whatnot. And he got defeated, and he retreated all the way to the Pueblo of Isleta. Isleta, New Mexico.
Which is the southern part of now Albuquerque.
That is correct. And he tried to regroup there. His lieutenant governor, Alonso Garcia, had gotten wind that Otermin had been killed in up in the north. So he had no way of knowing if the information that he was getting was accurate.
Oh yeah.
So he decided to leave, come south. And then when Otermin reaches Isleta, he is just furious that his lieutenant governor, Alonso Garcia, has left. So he packs his stuff up, does a destruction of the Pueblo.
There were two exits, one before the other.
That is correct.
Oh, okay.
And then he captures, from what we believe to be 317... Pueblo Indians from the Pueblo of Isleta, and he brings them down here to the El Paso area in 1680. In 1681, Otermin wants to reconquer New Mexico, but he only gets as far off as Cochiti. Again, the Pueblo Indians are too strong for him.
Where is that? He got as far as where?
The Pueblo of Cochiti. Which is around the center of the state,
okay,
give or take, yeah. And he can't go on. The winter has started to set in. His horses are getting tired. Most of the horses are malnourished. So he decides, it's not a good game plan to reconquer New Mexico. So he retreats back to the El Paso area. But before he comes down here, he surprises another 385 Isleta Indians from the Pueblo of Isleta, New Mexico, and he brings them down as well to the El Paso area.
So at this point, he's gathered, almost 600, almost 1,000 people?
Almost, yeah. And then we are the descendants of those people that were brought here in 1680 and in 1681 by Antonio de Otermin, who, who was the Spanish governor at the time.
Well, so, everybody, go ahead.
Oh, no. So they basically came here and they, did many of them try to go back or they there, were kind of like?
There are records that a lot, most of the people, some of the people did escape and they did return to their pueblos. There was also people, there was also another group. A lot of people are not familiar with a group that came here, another Pueblo Indian.
Oh, the Pitos.
The Pitos, yeah. They also came here with our people, as well as some people from the Pueblo of Jemez as well.
The Jemez.
Yeah, the Jemez people. Yeah.
Well, I've heard it that the Tiguas basically settled at Isleta, and the Pitos went to Socorro. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct.
In Socorro, Texas.
Well, there's two populations of Pitos. One was settled in Socorro, and then the other one was settled in Senecu, which is just across the border in our sister city in Juarez.
In Juarez.
Okay. And at that time, the Mission Trail was the geography was very different in El Paso.
Oh, yeah.
The river was on the other side of where you now have everything going on in our valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changed when the river moved. I mean, that was a whole big deal. But at the original time, you had how many pueblos? You had how many missions? You had the Guadalupe Mission, the original, which is now still in downtown Juarez. The Senecu, somewhere over in there. Then there was another one somewhere around, Paisano and near the Coliseum. Then they pick up with ones that do exist now, Isleta, Socorro. And we claim the Mission Trail as another, some people call it a mission, but it's not. And that is the
San Elizario.
San Elizario wasn't a pueblo.
It was Presidio.
It was a fort for the Spanish.
Yeah,
and
the
so,
Presidio, exactly.
Anyway, that's the rundown of what the Spanish did here. And then when the river up and moved, that changed a lot of history for a lot of people. But what'd that do for the Tiguas?
Well, from oral tradition, we know that the river kind of almost was where I-10 is at. Today.
Way up there, yeah.
Way up there. So we were on the southern tip, right? So around the 1830s, maybe 1840s, the river shifted to its present location, and but it created two rivers, and we were in the center of it, and
the Isla
was called the Isla,
another
right?
island.
Yeah, the Isla, and then when the Americans came in and they were trying to settle the boundaries. The Mexicans wanted it on the other side.
Well, of course.
Yeah. And then the Americans were, no, we want it on the other side. So which is, I mean, for us, it worked great because we were, the boundary was marked where the river is now today. So
the deepest part of the channel.
The deep, exactly.
Yeah.
So
well, you have another major complication, which most people in history have ignored. And that was it was a land grant. At some point, you were granted land in El Paso County.
That is correct.
And the land didn't just go into El Paso County. It went over into Mexico.
That is correct.
And that whole bunch of land that used to be Tiguas is just like, forget about it. Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Then the ones that ended
up Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, Mexico said, well, we don't know. We never heard of you people. But the ones in Texas, that became a contentious moment because all of a sudden people realized in the Texas legislature in the mid-1800s, we're going to put a railroad through there. Ooh, valuable land is coming. Oh, let's go see what's out there. Oh, a bunch of these northern New Mexico Indian people. Oh, don't worry about them. And that's how you got your land stolen.
That is correct.
Tell us that part of the story.
Well, there was a guy by the name of Albert Jennings Fountain who was, I think he was a politician here in the early or late 1860s, early 1870s, and he managed to incorporate the town of Isleta. And you got to understand now these were frontier times, and we were Native Americans who had no vote and no say in the area,
no education,
exactly
in the local
politics. So they managed to incorporate the town of Isleta. Oh, by the way, this guy also sat on the railroad commission for the state,
so he knew.
He knew what was up.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So him and his buddies, they kind of incorporated the town of Isleta, also with a lot of Hispanic, you know, political elites at the time,
without telling the Indians,
without telling us, yeah. And then through the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, these lands were supposed to be, you know, all Spanish land grants were supposed to be honored,
mm-hmm.
which they basically did. But in our case, they just They just ignored it.
Yeah, well, you were the Los Indios.
Yeah.
So
they,
yeah.
It was ignored.
Well, there was another complication with Abraham Lincoln in the middle of this, wasn't there?
That is correct. Before the 1871 incorporation, of course, we had the Civil War in the 1860s, in the early part of the 1860s. So Texas was we were part of the Confederacy. The
Confederate state.
It was a Confederate state. Yeah. And then Lincoln trying to sway the state of what would become the state of New Mexico from going from a Union state to a Confederate state.
Yeah.
He wanted more allies, so he actually sent one of his I guess assistants, and then he issued land patents to all of the pueblos in New Mexico, and he also gave them a cane of authority over them.
But he did not do that with the Tiguas in El Paso.
That is correct.
And that's why you don't have the recognition on a federal level originally that those tribes did.
That is correct.
You see, there's a big, huge piece of Abraham Lincoln history people don't know about that greatly affected El Paso, and in you specifically.
And that was like, 100 years before, actually almost 100 years before you finally got that recognition, which was in 1968, correct? When it went from federal, then like at the same day, state.
Yeah. Yeah. They federally recognize us, and boom, that same day, oh, no, you're under the state now.
Yeah, okay.
Interesting history. Did we cover all the trivia questions? We did not.
No, we didn't.
Should we just tell them which one of them's going to be? Nah, that'd be too easy.
Are we up for it? Yeah.
Yeah, we're about ready to do trivia.
No, a lot of people, I think, know these ones. We've talked about them so many times.
We declare time for trivia at this point.
Time for trivia.
Rick Quesada is the man in the house here talking about things. Now, your business card said director of the Tigua Indian Cultural Center. Am I correct?
The director of the Department of Cultural Preservation.
So to call you the cultural director is pretty accurate.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
That's who the guy is sitting here.
He's also a head mucky muck.
He's a guy that knows stuff.
He makes the coffee. He opens the door. He does everything.
He knows things. And we're not going to talk about buried bodies, but but he would know where those were too. But in the case of history, also you're in the historical commission.
That's correct.
So you got yourself plugged into this. This is good.
Which is good.
Rick will be here for the duration, and we're going to talk a bunch of stuff. Pepe's is not active today. This is their one day of the year they took off, so we're not going to pick a special.
Nope.
However, they're special. We'll just say Pepe's is special.
That's true. They're always special.
And then we're done with it, and we'll take their money, and we'll do some commercials. But do the trivia. What do you got for trivia questions?
Well, for trivia today, we've got two questions, of course. The first answer to the correct trivia question will be $20, a choice of either $20 in food to Pepe's and Canyon to you, or at El Paso Gold DVD, which we talked about, like these, you know, historic sites of El Paso, Smelter, Ghost Stories, of which one you don't. Don't we have one of these that kind of goes down into, or is it just San Elizario? You didn't do one on the mission, the Socorro mission?
Well, yeah,
or
they cover everything. I don't think we have that one here today.
Oh, okay.
But those are available for the trivia.
That's right.
So what's the question?
The first question is, when did the Tiguas become a federally and state-recognized Indian tribe?
We talked about that.
We just talked about
that.
Okay,
now what's the one we didn't talk about?
And the second one, which of the three missions is the oldest and was built by the Tigua tribe?
Oh, we know that.
That's an easy one.
We did talk about that.
We talk about that all
the
time.
Well, if you want to answer these questions and win the prizes.
You got to give us a call at 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the Juan and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
This weekend, we'll be traveling to the intersection of Western history and pop culture. It's the place where Geronimo was born and Billy the Kid's mother is buried. It's where the 2007 movie There Will Be Blood begins. And it's where the 2001 movie Rat Race ends. It's where the famous Western scout and frontiersman Kit Carson first saw combat. And where Butch Cassidy and the Wild Bunch would escape to after pulling a job. It was said they were familiar with every saloon and soiled dove in town. And it just so happens to be where our hogs, better known as the Harley Owners Group, will escape to this weekend. By now, you probably know that I'm talking about the one and only Silver City. A place that was founded in the summer of 1870, shortly after the discovery of silver ore deposits in Chloride Flat. But before you can discover what Silver City feels like from the top of the greatest American motorcycle ever built, you need to discover BarnettHarley.com or see us in person at Barnett Harley Davidson. Because your life, just like your new Harley, should always be a great ride.
Tropicana Homes, the largest and most trusted home builder in El Paso, will open the doors to their new community at Painted Desert in East El Paso on July 14th. Come see the new model homes and floor plans located off Darrington between Eastlake Boulevard and Pelicano. Tropicana Homes has been building quality homes since 1950 for generations of El Pasoans. Homes starting in the 150s, USDA benefits and great schools, restaurants, and shopping centers nearby. You're sure to find your new dream home. Visit TropicanaHomes.com for more information.
Of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Pollard.
544-5876. Give us a holler. We're looking for people to answer the questions about what?
The Tigua Indian, or as I was told,
specifically
Tai.
Yeah, the original name of our language is actually
Tai.
So one question is when did it become recognized?
When did the Tiguas become federally and state recognized Indian tribe?
Oh, this is what the year? Second one's easy.
And the second one, yeah, which of the three missions is the oldest built by the Tai tribe? I'm going to get
but you see,
right.
your question is flawed.
How is it?
Three missions.
Which of the three missions? Oh, excuse me. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Now if you click Guadalupe.
Well, no, we have Guadalupe. And you
have one and you have another.
I didn't mention the Presidio.
And you know,
so I'm not wrong.
The second one in our mission trail is only a day older.
Oh,
younger. Yeah, that's the right word. A day younger.
Day younger.
You realize that?
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. And Socorro was a day after Isleta when they dedicated it.
Well, they coordinate their ribbon cutting ceremonies?
They had one priest. And one mission per day, thank you. I'm going to go take a nap.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So,
okay.
Anyway, whatever that goes along with. But we had to tell you about a few other things going on here. I can't read that word. J-A-B-E-S. Well, okay, that's on the – whoever that is on hold here, 544-5876. McGoffin Home, this week they've got a camp going on. They may be full already, so you better call them up. But what they're doing, Melissa, they're doing kids' camps, life in the 19th century. You dress up as old Joseph McGoffin, and you go start a water company.
Or a trolley company, whatever he did.
But they play the parts of early people. Also, there are a bunch of people. You go down to the McGoffin Home State Historic Visitor Site. They've got stuff to look at. And just go look at the house. My goodness. Great place. And what do you got? You got other stuff going on.
Well, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, the El Paso Museum of History has summer camps going on. They've got one going this week, July 10th. I'm not sure if that camp's full. You might be surprised.
Just give them a call.
You know, you can give them a call down there. Also, the Museum of Space History in Alamogordo, New Mexico, has got some space camps. So I'd give a call to the El Paso Museum of History if you're here locally at 212-3163 and ask for Jamie. She can give you all the details because I know they have some other camps this summer also. And then the Museum of Space History in Alamogordo, they give them a call at 575-437-2840 or go to their individual websites. You can check them out.
Let's do trivia. Shall we do that?
We should do trivia.
We got a caller on the phone whose name I can't pronounce. Could you pronounce your name for me?
And in Spanish, it's Javes.
Javes. And in English, it is?
Yes.
In English, it would be?
James.
Okay.
James.
Well, welcome here.
Javes.
I don't think we've talked to you before. Good morning. We got a trivia. Are you ready for this, Melissa?
Okay. The first question we had was, when did the Tiguas become a federally and state-recognized Indian tribe?
That one I do know. It's 1968.
All right.
There you go. That's the only thing you need to know to get a prize.
So did you want the Pepes or did you want a video?
You know what? I want a video.
Ooh, all right.
Well, we got several here.
We got videos.
Pick a good one here.
Let's see. We've got Legends of El Paso Mountains, Mount Cristo Rey, The Ghost Stories, Volumes 2, 3, and 4. We have Tom Lee's El Paso, Mexican Revolution Sites, which is a good one. Last Tour of El Paso Smelter and Historic Sites and Markers.
Smelter's kind of a weird one. You want to try that one?
You know what? I'm very interested in the ghost stories. I live close to Waco Tangs, and there's a lot of things you see out there.
Which one might have?
Well, We are not going to do Waco tanks on a ghost story, I don't think. But you can try to get take number three. I think he liked
number
three.
Three would be the good one on that.
Take number three. Three has got the Pattersons on it.
Pattersons.
It's got Keystone.
Oh, it's got Santa Rosario.
It's got some interesting stuff on there. So you might get a –
Oh, yeah. We were just talking about Keystone.
Take a look at that. Call us up. See what you think about it, okay?
Sure will.
Hold on here. Don't go anywhere. Shelley will come tell you to pick this up, all right?
Yes, and another thing. You know what?
Sure.
Every other weekend when I'm towing, I listen to you guys because – I've learned a lot of things about it. I was born here, but a lot of things they didn't taught us in school, and I've got to know El Paso more than I used to.
Oh, cool.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's very accurate. I came through the school system here. I got zero education about El Paso local history, and that's one reason we're doing this show is because people need to know.
Never too old to learn.
I think you just got lost in a windstorm out there. All right, hold on here, and Shelly will tell you how to pick it up. Thank you for calling. Appreciate that. Shelly, line one, and you're not going to give him a back rub, too, are you? See, I was trying to tell people, if Shelly, no, she's not going to do that.
What?
Never mind. But the thing is, we want to thank Shelly for being the call screener lady in there, and the man who is back with us, and he's doing better, and he is the guy. One, two, three.
Sergio Valenzuela.
Dude, that's like he scored a goal, you know.
He's our star.
He's the man in there. All right, enough of that. We're going to get back here and talk to Rick Quesada in a moment. Shall we take another break and
we
do that?
We should take another break.
Call us up if you have a question for Rick or a thought or Facebook.
I'm up on Facebook finally here. So I haven't got Rick's new picture up. We have his picture from that you posted, but you can check us out there at El Paso History Radio Show.
And post a question.
Yeah, post a question for us or say hi or just like us, whatever you want to do.
Or call this number.
915-544-KTSM.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution Sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all, plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. ephistory.com.
Let me ask you a question. How long has it been since you've updated your home or business list of assets or property inventory? In the case of a loss by fire, theft, or natural disaster, the insurance company and police will ask for detailed descriptions and often require pictures as proof of ownership. If you can't remember, you can't recover. Contact Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Our process provides detailed documentation of what you own. There is no price tag on peace of mind. Call 915-581-7099.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Pohl.
Oh, a lot going on around here in the El Paso History Radio Show. Melissa, why don't you, there's one I would like you to read here about the hidden fires of rebellion. I think Rick Quesada would get a kick out of it.
We were talking
about that.
I think he'll get a kick out of that one.
Yes,
we do.
But in the meantime, everybody else, what we're doing here, we've got some new things happening on Facebook. We're going to turn on a store for our videos at El Paso History. And our website is becoming different all the time. Every week, every day, it's looking different, looking better.
Oh, I haven't looked
at
it.
So we're going to be into that kind of stuff. So that's what I've got. And what about, listen to this announcement here, Rick.
Well, this is speaking of the Pierros. We were just talking about them as having moved down here. You've got a lecture series, which should be a very interesting one. It's going to be coming up. The El Paso Museum of Archaeology, along with EPAS, has these lecture series going on all the time. And this one coming up, and this is going to be July 28th at 2 p.m., and it's free at the Museum of Archaeology, is called Hidden Fires of Rebellion, the Piro Pueblos, 1650 to 1700. And the popular notions of the Piro Pueblos, as far as notions exist, tend to be limited to the historical fact that some Pieros, as well as Tiwas, and other Pueblos ended up in the El Paso area in the wake of the Pueblo Revolt of 1680. It is often asserted that the Pieros were pro-Spanish, hence they left the Pueblos willingly with the Spanish, or did they? And so he's going to be talking about this. So it'll be a really interesting, I think, program, something you might be interested in, some of the Tiwas might be interested in talking about. But it'll be, I've heard some of this story before, and it's quite fascinating.
I've not heard this guy particularly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what his story is.
Dr. Michael Bletzer, B-L-E-T-Z-E-R.
Bletzer, yes, Dr.
Bletzer.
P. Bletzer.
That's a, something you might want to know about. Yeah. You may, I'll give you my announcement on that if you want to have that. And you might go give him a lecture.
And this doctor's spoken all, I mean, he's done archaeological projects in Europe, Central America, U.S. Southwest, and
I've never heard of him before, but that doesn't mean he doesn't exist.
He's done a lot of work with the Piro and the Salinas Piro, or the Tom Piro.
I actually know the guy.
Oh, you know him?
Yeah, I know.
He's
done extensive work on the Piro. In fact, he did a lot of archaeological work, and he actually uncovered a Piro kiva in Socorro, New Mexico.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, how cool is that?
That's the original homeland of the Piro.
In the central New Mexico,
central,
then.
Yeah, Socorro.
Wow.
New Mexico.
The man talking there is Rick Quesada, cultural officer of the Isleta del Sur Pueblo. And we have 544-5876 for calls about this. We got Jorge, got you on the radio. Jorge, good morning.
Good morning. Rick, I wanted to ask you, because an aspect of my mother's family are Tigua. When the Tigua were brought into Texas by the Spaniards, were they brought in all involuntarily? Because I have the impression that some of them were assistants to the Spanish in the revolt.
What was the question again? They were...
The Tigua, when they came into Texas with the Spanish, when the Spanish exited New Mexico, that it was because the Tigua were helping the Spanish in New Mexico.
With a gun to your head, maybe?
Well, I think maybe what he's thinking is that perhaps some of them that did cooperate with the Spanish were not liked also by certain parts of the other, you know, maybe they cooperated more with the Spanish than they wanted them to.
How would you know now?
Going back with our original stories that are handed down from our ancestors, we know that our people were forcefully brought down here to the El Paso area. Contrary to popular belief that we supported the Spanish, we were forced down here, actually.
Okay, I'm accepting of that. So what I'm curious is of how was it then that the Tigua were granted a land grant? It was by way the Spanish wasn't built to.
That is correct. But that was almost, say, maybe like 50, 60 years later. We got here in 1680, and then the land grant was issued by the Spanish in 1751.
And it just came about, how it just happened that the Spanish, that the Tigua were given the land grant by the Spanish just because of, why, was it on account of that presence of this Tigua in Texas that was gained by way of the Spanish?
What actually, I guess, instigated the land transfer to our people was that after 70 years here in the El Paso area, we had managed to cultivate the land. We had built the mission, the Isleta mission. The Acequia system.
Yeah.
We supported somewhat the local Franciscans that were stationed here at the church through our labor. And the crown or the governor at the time, I think it was Hinojosa, he was the one who issued the land grant to our people. But you got to be aware that El Paso was totally different in 1751 than it was in, you know, today. It was just part of it was desert, and then around the Isleta area was, of course, you know, fertile land where our people, you know, were basically farmers.
It is on account of that land grant that Isleta Independent School District exists, isn't it?
What's that connection? Jorge, what do you mean?
My belief, Isleta Independent School District is existing because of the 1751 land grant with Isleta. Isn't that correct?
I still don't see the connection there. Do you?
I might have read something like that. I think when a lot of the properties that were being sold off here going back to almost 100 years or almost 120 years after that, and you're talking about the 1871 corporation, the state of Texas actually gave most of the property illegally to the Texas school system.
And how is it then that when that was accomplished in 1871 by way of the means that it was, it separated then the totality that Isleta Independent School District is from El Paso Independent School District, right?
I'm not sure your question.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not understanding that question.
Of the two independent school districts that are principal, Isleta isn't an aspect of El Paso School District because of the because the separation of Isleta by way of that land grant of 1751 and subsequently the establishment in 1871 of the Texas Legislature's acts, right?
Jorge, this is not making a lot of sense. You're going in circles about this. We need to find a fact that that we can jump off here and attach to. Maybe we should just move on and just say we don't know the answer.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're all not sure
about that. But keep listening. We'll see if we can.
Somebody may call
actually,
up.
What I was trying to do was I was trying to credit the Isleta Independent School District with the Tiguas because of the history that the Tiguas have.
Well, yeah, but the Tiguas got so screwed into Isleta, I'm not sure that would make a difference.
So yeah. That's not the case then at all, then, right? There's no close.
I've never heard that.
You may have some.
I just don't know about it.
Yeah, okay. I understand that now. Okay.
Thanks for ringing up.
Thank you.
Thanks for being there, dude. It's an interesting history because that's one reason why we're doing this show today. A lot of people in this town don't know the Tigua history, so we're trying to – and that particular nuance, I'm not sure we're going
to
settle.
And it's been so convoluted, I think, over the years that it makes it difficult to try to get the right story. You know,
also,
and I think that's what's good. What you're doing is through your programs, you're explaining that history, straightening it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you something I found out when I was researching and doing the video for the Tiguas, and it was Joe Sierra who pointed this out to me. And he's now their cacique. Is the word, correct word chief or just cacique?
Cacique.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Joe and I were working on this film for the Tiguas, and I said, "Now tell me the story as you hear it." He said, "Well, we couldn't be anything but Mexicans, or they'd kill us." And he said, "That's what happened for 100 years. We had to hide our Indianness because if we turned out to be Indians, the state of Texas had a law on the books until 1996." That you could form a local militia if the Indians got out of hand. And so there's all kinds of legerdemain, shall we say, moves against the Tiguas that have never been totally understood, but they were never totally above board either. I mean, Fountain showed up and basically incorporated the town out from under the Tiguas because the Tiguas couldn't speak English or read English. They couldn't read English. So he posted these notices, and all of a sudden, a year later, that tax wasn't paid, and that property was then put up for auction at the local courthouse, and people standing there waiting to buy their land out from under the Tiguas who didn't even know their land was for sale.
That is correct. And then for our people, we understood a totally different aspect of control of the land. We were given ejidos by the Spanish, and an ejido is basically between a 20 and 25-acre plot of land. Per family.
Oh.
Okay, and then the rest was communal. The rest belonged to the pueblo. Uh-huh. There was no single family that controlled that property. It belonged to the pueblo as a whole. But your ejido, which is, was your 20 acres, that's what you controlled. And as farmers, we use that to plant for our subsistence here in Isleta.
And the guy showed up from Austin.
Totally different way of controlling the land. Yeah.
Well, they applied Texas law to your land,
right?
And it hadn't been Texas land in your mind. So that's and again, I can't emphasize enough. There's all kinds of stuff went on against the Tiguas, and a whole chunk of your property is still in Mexico.
That is correct. You'll
never get a hold of that.
Oh no. But there is a good book out there by a guy named Randy Lee Eichhoff. It's called Exiled. That chronicles the land theft, I guess, the land that got stolen by politicians here in El Paso.
Yeah. Well, it's a bizarre history, but it's that is what happened. The number of things that have gone on in your history. What do you think people should know about the early years? I mean, your tribe was originally in an area in central New Mexico of Abu, Gran Quivira, and Corari. If I said that right.
Corari.
Mm-hmm. Korokorai. Mm-hmm. And that is then, that crowd moved from there, probably a drought, up to Isleta with an I.
That is correct, yeah.
And then the Spaniards hit the fan.
Yeah, those places that you're naming are actually today are a national park.
Salinas
National Monument.
National Monument.
Yeah. And then our people lived in a place called Coray. Record dates that around 1674, 75, 76, there was a drought. And that pueblo was not located next to the river. So we would capture rainwater. Oh. There's a mountain there, but there was no rain, and then the drought set in, and then we had a lot of attacks from the Apaches. So that forced our people to move into the Pueblo of Isleta with our linguistic cousins.
Apaches were not your friends.
They were. It was an uneasy alliance. They allied with us in the 1680 Pueblo Revolt against the Spanish.
So they had irons in that fire too.
They helped us in the revolt.
All right, the whole idea of the Isleta del Sur Pueblo. What goes on there nowadays that we should know about?
We have the we're in the summer now, so we just finished our Feast of St. Anthony, which is on June 13th. We've been having that feast for over 300 years in that same location. And it's a feast where we do a lot of traditional dancing ceremonies combined with a lot of ritual or Catholicism within the church grounds itself.
That's one thing that you did take away with the Spanish was the Catholic holidays, mm-hmm. for sure.
That is correct. But we are not unique in that area. I mean, all the pueblos up north, you know, they all dance for Saint days. All their feast days are after Saint days. And some of the pueblos are even named after saints. Pueblo of Santa Clara, Pueblo of Santa Ana, Pueblo of San Felipe, Pueblo of San Ildefonso, Pueblo of Santo Domingo.
Tell us about the feast day. You do a lot of preparation to get into it.
Oh, yeah. It's we consider it kind of like a huge family reunion. We have a lot of relatives that do not live here in the El Paso area. So for feast day, it's about 2 weeks of preparation before the actual event takes place on the 13th. And there's a lot of practices of dance practices, food preparation, a lot of church gatherings.
Food's a biggie.
That's a biggie right there. Yeah.
We have video of a lot of food preparation,
and a lot of and then the one I like the most is the eve of the feast, which is on the 12th. We wake up very early on the 12th, and then we gather this willow that you find in the Rio Grande and in the most of the acequias. It's called the jara. We call it jara, and it's almost like it's kind of like the Tiwa Lysol, I would say. It smells very, very nice, and we put those we cut those, and then we put them on these like frames. They provide shade to the people. So,
oh, okay, like so they do up north, and yeah,
and it smells good.
It smells awesome. Yeah, so it smells nice, and then it keeps you fresh and cool in the hot summer heat.
And that preparation went on for a long time to get that done. What does a bread figure in, by the way? I missed some bread last Sunday. I was down there. They had no bread.
Yeah. Oh, the fry bread.
Oh, no. Well.
Yeah. The bread preparation is done probably about two days before feast.
And you make a lot of it.
We make over 300 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Are they all done in the ovens? The
Hornos?
The Beehive ovens, yeah.
Yes.
All of it's done.
That's such a different taste.
Oh, yeah.
How many have you had it?
How many can you fit in there at once?
I think
30.
About 30, 35, yeah.
That's a lot of bread. I mean, I've seen that on several different times when we even put a camera in there once to show some of that. But that's a lot of interesting history with the Tiguas. We got a caller on line one there, Shelley. Pick that up and tell me who that is. If you want to get involved in this, we got Rick here for the duration, so get your questions ready. But the Isleta del Sur Pueblo Cultural Center is something you might want to take a look at. A lot of these things are on the panels that you've now just recently published. And that's one thing to talk about, is that you've got a serious amount of history in that museum. Let's talk to a guy now on the phone here who we've just stirred up, 544-5876. His name is Johnny. Hey, Johnny, good morning.
Hey, how you doing? How's everything going?
Good morning, Johnny.
Good, thank you. What's up?
Yeah, I just happened to tune in late as always, and I caught a touch of what you went on. And I want to ask the guest quickly, because I know you're on the clock. I used to be a frequent visitor to the Speaking Rock Casino. Two questions. What happened that they closed it down? And are they going to ever open it up again? And also have a comment. Maybe they shouldn't open it up because I left half my retirement money out there.
He wants a chance to get it back.
Yeah, it's a game of chance, Johnny. It's a game of chance. By the way, it was good to finally meet you. He showed up at Pepe's here about 3 weeks ago.
And I missed him.
Yeah, so we have to. And don't go there today, Johnny, because it's closed today. But they'll be
all
back
right,
open
then.
Next week.
I always be here open for when you guys want to go in the
future. They only close one day of the year. That's this week they're on vacation. Anyway, Johnny, some questions for Rick Quesada. What do you think, Rick?
Well, the Speaking Rock is open.
Now
by
Sergio.
Have a look. It's been open since 2001.
Hold on there. We've got a little microphone issue
here.
Can you hear me?
There we go. That's much better. Much better.
Sorry about that. Go ahead. The Speaking Rock.
It's still open.
But it's an entertainment center now.
That is correct. An entertainment center.
Yeah, but it's not a casino, which is what made the bigger money, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So
yeah, that's the one I was talking about. Yeah, I know it's still open, and I know they still have an entertainment, but it had a Las Vegas-style casino that I used to go to, as I said, and I love going out there for all kinds of reasons. I love the entertainment. I love not having to get on a plane to go to Vegas and all that good stuff. It really broke my heart when they closed it down. And I want to know, is the casino going to open up again ever?
Well, we're trying. We're trying.
That's a state of Texas issue, really.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't there recently one of the reservations has now been allowed gambling or is working on gambling in the state
Cachadas
of Texas?
The Cachadas over there?
Yeah. Yeah, the Cachada has a casino.
No, I
don't think so.
I think it was the Kickapoos down in South
Texas. Well, I was in Southeast Texas. I'll have to look that one up because I thought I saw something when I was
Well, that's
there.
Not open either, is it?
No, not the...
Johnny, your comment. What else did you have in mind?
Oh, yeah, I put it all in there.
Fair enough.
That was my comment that I love going out there, and I really miss it, and I hope they get it back going again.
All right, vote for the
Johnny.
Casino from Johnny.
Thanks
for calling. You take her easy. We're going to take a break here and come back in a minute. Got Rick Quesada here. If you have questions, the number to call would be...
915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
Dell's Black Friday and July sales event is back, and it's the biggest one ever. Get incredible deals on PCs and gaming laptops with Intel Core processors. Plus, get free shipping on everything, including electronics and accessories. So visit Dell.com/Black Friday or call 800-BUY-DELL today.
It's Saturday, July 7th. What's new today on the iHeartRadio app?
iHeartRadio.
We've got the ultimate playlist to set the mood for the summer of 2018. Ready? Check out the classic rock playlist.
Don't stop.
Gen X radio playlist has a huge variety.
You're unbelievable.
Big hair 80s. And so many more. Let iHeartRadio handle your summer soundtrack.
iHeartRadio.
All your favorite music, all your favorite stations, all free.
More of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We got a lot of things going on here. We have Roy on line one. Roy is on the radio. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Surviving.
Good morning, Roy.
What's up?
I just want to make a comment. Back the last week of May, my brother and his wife are down here from Canada. She has a couple of degrees, and one of them is in museumology, or what do they call it?
Ah, okay.
And we took her to that museum, and she was very, very impressed.
Oh, the Tigwa Indian Cultural Center Museum.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I'd ask. I guess it was Rick, because he was running around in charge. They were doing some painting and stuff. And I asked him about when do they do dances, and he said, "Well, they're going to do one about whatever 1 o'clock or whatever it was." And somewhere in the time we were out there waiting, and he came out and had a key, opened up his door, and I said, "Oh, you're important. You got a key." He says, "I'm the boss."
Well, yeah, that's how it works.
But my brother and my sister-in-law both, and I also appreciate the fact those young kids came out in the heat and did a dance, and I mean they did a whole routine. It was wonderful. There's a lot of variety in the dancing and so forth, and we were just very impressed about it. We're sitting in the shade, and they're out
in the
sun.
Of course, yeah.
Well, and we don't know if we could even applaud enough. There's only three of us watching, and I want you to pass it on to them, Rick, that we still appreciate that.
Some people do.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for visiting the Cultural Center.
I'm sorry?
Thanks
for the visit.
Oh, well, hey, I'll be back.
Right, good to talk to you.
My brother's from Canada, so, okay. Later.
Thanks a lot. You take her easy. And the Tigua Indian Cultural Center, you do dances on Sundays and Saturdays? Or
Saturdays and Sundays, that is correct. We have
1 and 3, or...?
11, 1, and 3.
Oh, 11, 1, and 3.
Are the dance schedule.
So get yourself scheduled down on the Mission Trail. All right, let's talk to George. George, good morning.
Good morning. I have a quick comment for, and I would like Rick to say something about this. I'm one of those people that think that the first group of Piguas that came out with the Spanish came willingly. I'm one of those that thinks that because the ones that weren't going to come with the Spanish willingly, because they were Christian, they had been Christianized, went to live with some of their cousins, some of the other groups of Native Americans in that area. So I'm one of those that think that the groups that came with Spanish were not forced to come here. But it has always bothered me, why is it that most of the Tigua natives here claim that they were forced to come here? And one of the things that I have found out is that in the attempts to recolonize New Mexico, some of the ones that went in there, they did capture Piguas and brought them here. Now, that group were forced to come here. And I would like Rick to say something about this.
Might have to go to next hour. We got 1 minute. Rick, go.
Sure. From our oral tradition, both groups were forcefully brought here by the Spanish. When Otermin gets there in 1680, after the defeat of Santa Fe, and Alonso Garcia has departed Isleta, he is left with these tribal members there. Most of the people from our oral traditional stories say that some of the people got wind that he was coming in, and a lot of the people took off. But the people that were there were kind of stuck there. They couldn't leave, so they were caught. This is the group in 1680, and they were brought here by the Spanish forcefully, not by choice.
Well, I think that's where we are. And that's by the way, we should tell everyone again that announcement, Melissa, that you've got on the 28th, is it, about the lecture at the Archaeology Museum?
Oh, yes. Let me find that. I can get that next hour.
Restate that. Let me see.
Okay. So, it's going to be July 28th at 2 p.m. at the Archaeological Museum.
And it'll have this subject. Go out there and
ask
him
about it. Yeah,
because there's a scholarly opinion.
That's covering the Piros. Yeah, that's covering the Piros. So, we were saying the Piros were the Socorro Mission.
That's right, and they were in Socorro, New Mexico.
We're done for this hour. We'll take it up again next hour. See you then.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the El Paso History Show. There's another hour to go, so please stay tuned. This hour is brought to you by Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. We'll be right back after the news, right here on News Radio 690 KTSM El Paso.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all. plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. ephistory.com.